Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic and guide to all things cinematic. He joins us weekly, and if you were paying attention, we are going to talk about the Maryland Film Festival. Hi, David.
Hi, Jill. How are you this week?
Terrific.
Okay, well, I am down in New Orleans again, so I'm not actually in Maryland at the moment, but I have just recently completed attending the most recent Maryland Film Festival, and I like to talk about that when that happens each year. Back in my years as the movie critic of a daily newspaper, I went to festivals really a lot. Right now, the Cannes Film Festival is going on in France as we speak, and I used to go to that every year for years and years, and there were plenty of other festivals that I attended either every year or some years. And, you know, because they're called film festivals, that nice little alliterative term, people think that they're sort of nothing but a lot of frolicking. And in fact, for a movie critic, film festivals can be very hard work because there's a lot of films that one usually wants to see. The Maryland Film Festival is a fairly small-scale festival. It's only a few years long, and now that I'm no longer a movie critic of a daily newspaper, I can do whatever I want. And so that is the only film festival that I now attend regularly, and I always have a good time, and I always like to talk about it. It's acquired some additional fame in recent years because one or two critics of note have started to pay attention to it, besides me, perhaps. But I am not a critic of note, but I am a critic. It's a small-scale festival, but a good one. It is run by a guy named Jed Dietz, and he has a staff of programmers. And like some film festivals do, it has certain traditions that it follows every year. So I'll start off by maybe mentioning a couple of those. One thing is that there is a tradition of having a silent film every year with a live musical accompaniment. Silent films were always, going back to the earliest years of movies being in existence, live music was always played in the theater or Nickelodeon or whatever it was where they were shown. And there are nowadays quite a number of composers and small groups that regularly make up new music for old silent movies, and one of the very best of them is the Alloy Orchestra. And they're just basically a trio, but they have a whole lot of instruments that they have set up down below the screen. And again, every year, the Maryland Film Festival, the Alloy Orchestra, to come and do a film is shown, and they do the music. And this year, it's a movie that I actually know pretty well because I've used it in teaching on a number of occasions. It's a Japanese movie from way back in 1926 called A Page of Madness, made by the very great Japanese director, Kenesuke Kinugasa. And the fascinating thing about this is that it is a movie which really makes almost no sense at all. It is called A Page of Madness, and it has something to do with a mental institution, an old-fashioned, what they used to call insane asylum. And there is a woman there who is apparently mad, or at least is certainly being held there. And somebody comes who apparently wants to get her out of there. And the whole thing is told with these images of insanity and lunacy and madness. And in a little Q&A after the film was over, a member of the audience was asking the Alloy Orchestra guys about what was the story of that film, and they were saying, well, when this film was originally shown in Japan, there would have been a benshi, a sort of narrator, who would have sort of explained it to the audience, only it appears that the benshi didn't have any idea what the heck it was all about either, so basically nobody has ever known, and that's always been my philosophy about the movie. It doesn't make any sort of literal sense, and that is the sense of it, that is deliberate, and it's a crazy movie, and my hat is off to the Maryland Film Festival for showing a movie which is just such a pure visual experience, because that's what it is. It's kind of a swirl of images that kind of are dizzying in their intensity without making any sort of literal sense. and the Alloy Orchestra did a fine job of providing music for it this year, as they pretty much always do. Another tradition of the Maryland Film Festival is that one of our great local filmmakers, John Waters, of Pink Flamingos fame and Hairspray fame and so forth, that young rebel who has turned into sort of an old gear of the rebellious movie scene, John Waters, who loves to make movies that are outrageous, every year is invited to present a movie of his choice at the festival. And this year, the movie he chose was a film which actually hails from Eastern Europe. It's a sort of a co-production, mainly from the Czech Republic and Slovakia, with Polish and French input as well. A movie called I, Olga Hepnerova, which is based on the real case of a young woman, she was in her early 20s, who had always felt alienated from the world, partly because she realized that she was a lesbian and didn't feel that she was understood, partly because she felt that her family had always oppressed her and because society had always oppressed her. And she sort of had this sort of breakdown or breakout when she was in her early 20s and drove a vehicle into a bunch of totally innocent people in Prague, Czechoslovakia, and killed quite a number of them and injured a whole bunch more. And so the movie is based on this case, and the actual crime itself is just one very brief little part of the movie. Mainly, it's about this young woman sort of coming to terms with herself, or more accurately, failing to come to terms with herself. It was directed by Thomas Weinreb and Peter Kasda, and it's a beautiful directed movie, shot in this very kind of austere black and white tones. And it's very moody and beautifully acted, and a very, very good choice. I don't always appreciate John's choice of movies to show at the festival. Sometimes I just don't think they're all that good. But this year, he called my attention to a movie which I think is a very, very fine one. And anybody who's interested in the problems of growing up different and becoming a young adult and feeling that your sexuality and your personality are not in sync with any of the people around you, it's not exactly a psychological profile, but it has elements of that. Mainly, I just found it quite a transfixing audio-visual experience. So, aside from these additions, such as the annual silent film and the annual John Waters Presents film, the Maryland Film Festival shows all kinds of new movies. And I'm going to just focus on three of them. The first one I'm going to mention is a movie called Cannibal, which is spelled C-A-N-I-B-A. And yes, that sounds a little like cannibal, and that's what it's about. It is a documentary about a cannibal. It was made by the team of Lucien Castaigne-Taylor and Verena Paravel, who are probably best known for a movie they did a few years ago called Leviathan, which is a documentary that takes place on a fishing vessel out at sea. And is not a conventional documentary in the sense that it's not conveying a whole lot of information to us. It is mainly a kind of immersive audiovisual experience. I'm referring to that earlier film of theirs, Leviathan, where we are just left to get our bearings as we have these extremely vivid shots going on for a whole feature-length film of what happens on a fishing vessel out at sea in, you know, conditions which are not always very friendly to the people on board. And Cannibal is a very, very different movie, although it too is a very immersive film without the sort of narration and sort of orderly progression of shots that allows us to get our bearings in the usual documentary way. And Cannibal is filmed largely, not entirely, but largely in extreme close-ups, mainly of its main character, a guy named Issei Sagawa, and his brother, who is also a part of the film. And Sagawa is an actual guy, this is a documentary, who quite a number of years ago kidnapped a young woman, or one way or another abducted her, and intended to cannibalize her, and sort of did. And he was, this is really the only cannibalistic act, apparently, of his life, or the only one that got him in trouble, at least. But he was clearly mentally unbalanced. And he became kind of famous. People who study this kind of thing are all familiar with Issei Sagawa. And he was then declared unfit for trial because he was declared mentally ill. And he lived on for many, many years after that, has lived on for many years after that. And this documentary documentary focuses on him. And again, it's shot very largely in extreme close-ups to where the whole screen is filled often with sort of just part of his face. And the shots are not always in focus, and the idea is to give us this sort of partly focused, partly comprehensible, partly very mysterious portrait of this very mysterious and very disturbing person. I found the movie at first very frustrating. I was very—I was wondering whether this was really going to be worth actually sitting through at feature length. And ultimately, it was. We don't really learn anything about his motivations or about his personality or anything else, but through his little sort of monologues, he doesn't say very much. And little interactions with his brother as they sort of talk back and forth, we learn we just get an impression of what it's like to be this very, very strange, bizarre person who has lived a very strange, bizarre life. And, well, I found the whole thing an unsettling, but quite a fascinating experience. And people who are interested it's really an experimental film. And people who are interested in this sort of thing and in the sort of immersive experience this movie provides, and especially who are interested in the history of bizarre crime and so forth, would do well to see Canibal. Castaigne Taylor and Paravel are quite a remarkable team. They do very, very adventurous cinematic work, and I just found this movie really ultimately quite compelling. Now, a couple of fairly normal films, and I'm going to touch on these very briefly. Maybe we'll come back to them because they are both due for commercial openings right about now as well. First, I want to talk about First Reformed, which is a new movie written and directed by Paul Schrader. I've known Paul for many a long year. He is a fascinating filmmaker. He is known for screenplays for a couple of Martin Scorsese's most famous movies, particularly Taxi Driver and Raging Bull, although they've done other work together as well. First Reformed brings together a number of Paul Schrader's just very dependable obsessions that he's had over the years with religion, particularly certain kinds of Protestant religion, and with crime, and with it's a very, very interesting psychological portrait. It focuses on a minister played by Ethan Hawke who gets involved with a young married couple, who are environmental activists. And something very tragic happens to the husband of this young couple very early in the film. And the minister then stays in pretty close contact with the young man's widow and finds himself involved with tracing out what this young environmental activist might have been planning to do. It turns out that he was making a suicide vest in his garage, and he was apparently planning some sort of violent protest, and now that is not going to happen. And the minister, however, is very involved in all of this. And another of Paul Schrader's obsessions has been with the films of the towering French filmmaker Robert Bresson, and particularly Bresson's film Diary of a Country Priest, which is about a priest who gradually, in a sort of a way, commits a sort of holy suicide over the course of the film. And it turns out that First Reformed is also picking up on some of the points in that movie. So anyway, this is starting to get too complicated for me to get into in a very short time here. Let me just say that First Reformed is a very, very daring psychological drama with a very powerful spiritual edge to it. It is not a movie for everybody, but the acting in it is quite wonderful, especially by Ethan Hawke and Amanda Seyfried as that young the young widow of the environmental activist. And, well, it's a fascinating movie. I hope you get back to it maybe in a week or two because it deserves a bit more discussion. Paul Schrader is a very, very daring filmmaker, and this is a very, very great film in a lot of ways, cinematically especially. And finally, a new movie by one of Baltimore's great, well, I shouldn't say great, but very promising still, up-and-coming writers, Matthew Porterfield. He has made a few movies now, a few features, and his new one is called Soller's Point. And it's about a very young man who has just gotten out of prison, and he was a drug dealer, and he was under house arrest for a while, and now he is back out in the community, and he doesn't have a job, and he doesn't have any money, and he sort of drifts back into drug addiction, and that's what the movie, I meant drug dealing, not drug addiction, and that is what the movie is about. It stars Jim Belushi as the young man's father, Nicole Lombardi as the young man himself. It is a drama, a melodrama, a very, very well-acted movie, a very episodic movie where we have different things happen to our young hero or anti-hero without always a lot of connective tissue to fashion the whole thing into a traditional linear narrative. I found it far and away Matthew Porterfield's best film to date, and I was really, I just had a very, very fascinating time watching it, and it's, again, a film I hope we can come back to and talk about maybe in a week or two. So that is my report on the latest Maryland Film Festival. It was a, it was just a very good and happy occasion with a lot of challenging, unconventional works, and that's one of the things that film festivals do best. And that is my festive story this week, Joe.
For which we thank you, Mr. Festival, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the Maryland Film Festival.